And now, stories from the history of Greater India, the divine Mahabharata. Anyone who bathes himself in the nectar of these tales will emerge with greater courage, stronger will, and a purer heart.
Today's story from the Mahabharata is the history of the Kuru dynasty. King Vichitravirya married the two princesses, Ambika and Ambalika. The wives considered themselves to be immensely fortunate in having such a handsome, sweet-natured man for their lord. They lived a very happy life, but not for long. Fate struck again. Young Vichitravirya was found to suffer from the fatal, dreadful disease, consumption. Not all the devotion of his people nor the skill of the best physicians could save him from an early death. Satyavati, the mother of the king, was stunned by the calamity that had befallen her. The loss of both her sons was too terrible. But what hurt her more was the thought that the Kuru house did not have an heir. This was the fact that broke her heart. She spent hours trying to think of a way to rekindle the flame that was extinguished. She summoned her son Bhishma to her presence and said,
"Look at me, my son. I have now no hope of happiness. I have lost my beloved husband. He was gathered to his forefathers. I could bear that since he had reached an old age and he followed the rule that old men must die. Chitrangada was killed. Before I could reconcile myself to the loss that nearly killed me, I found that Vichitravirya is also dead. The only hope of the Kuru house has been destroyed in the flower of youth. I am desperate. The line must continue. I have decided on the course of action. I know the way to continue the line of the Kurus. With you rests the task of making the Kuru line live again."
Bhishma was surprised. He told her,
"Mother, there's no way that I, who am a confirmed bachelor, can continue the line."
Satyavati said,
"My son Vichitravirya died without leaving a son. His two wives, whom you bought for him, are still young with their heart's desires unfulfilled. The only right action evident to me is this. You must take them and make them mothers of the future scions of the house of Kuru. You must do this for the reason that the lineage must continue. This rule was followed by many of your ancestors. This is the only way. You must take the wives of your brother, and your sons will then be the true descendants of Kuru. It is your solemn duty to do this."
Bhishma answered her patiently. He said,
"Mother, because you are overpowered by the grief and shock caused by your sudden losses, you are suggesting these things to me. There's no doubt that a rule like the one you suggest does exist, and I am indeed aware of it. Custom also has lent its approval to this rule. But, Mother, your asking me to follow this rule is wrong and improper. You know that I have sworn to forego the throne, and married life as well. I did it for your sake, and surely you could not have forgotten that. Do you not remember the terrible vow I took? I have taken an oath that in this present life of mine, woman has no place. Now you suggest that I should take the wives of my dead brother? Yes, indeed, you are very much upset by the death of our beloved Vichitravirya. If you were not, you would not have suggested this to me. I feel very sorry for you, Mother, and your grief, but please, Don't ask such a thing of me.
And she answered him,
I remember the oath and the circumstances under which you took that terrible oath. I know, too, that you did it for the sake of your father and me. But now the circumstances have changed. Devavrata, it was because a son of mine had to be king that you took the oath. But my sons are dead. The race threatens to die out, so as a desperate cure, as a last resort, I am suggesting this course of action. You must not let the Kuru clan die out. I am your mother. It is your duty to do what pleases me. You must obey. That is the greater religiousness than all the oaths that you have taken.
Bhishma had his temper under control till now, but he could not hold out any longer. Perhaps in his mind's eye, the past events came back like a landscape reflected in a drop of dew. His mother Ganges had his happy boyhood with her in the heavens, his education, first in political science from Brihaspati and Shukra, and then his learning the Vedas from the Vedangas and from Vashishta. Bhishma's mind went now to the days he spent with his guru Bhargava learning archery. His mother had made him learn all this because she wanted him to be a worthy son of the house of the Kurus. She wanted him to be the ideal king. She had told him that so often. His mind went to the happy days he spent with his father, 4 years of perfect companionship. They had been comrades. His father was lost in love of him, and he, in his turn, was devoted to his father. Bhishma had been crowned the Yuvaraj. Then, out of the air, there appeared this Satyavati. To please his father and the cupidity of her father, he gave up all that was beautiful in this world. It was then that he, young as he was, became old in a moment, just like that, old. Nothing seemed worthwhile since then. He conformed his life to a rigid pattern of black and white. Then came this woman, Amba, the crimson thread that shuttled in and out of the black and white fabric he had woven for himself and caused great havoc. He would not take her because he could not. He broke her heart and ruined her womanhood because of that terrible oath he had taken. He had not obeyed his guru Bhargava when he asked him to take this woman, Amba. And now, after all this, his stepmother commanded him to take the wives of his dead brother. All this anger unleashed itself as he spoke in a voice trembling with fury.
Mother, you do not know the strength of my mind. You do not know the firmness of my religiosity. You do not, after all these years, know me at all. Nothing will make me do what you command me to do. The earth may lose her perfume. Water may lose the sweetness that is part of her. The sun may lose his brilliance, or the moon her snowy coolness. Lord Dharma may abandon his righteousness, but I will not swerve from my vow. Truth to me is greater than all the promised rewards of heaven. The world may end, but not the strength of my mind. Nothing, nothing can move me, not even you with your power over me as my mother. I have once dared to defy my guru for the sake of this oath, and I will not now in my old age be moved by your words. Please, without any further discussion, desist from this foolish and useless attempt.
Again and again Satyavati tried to remonstrate with Bhishma, but he stood firm like a rock, unaffected by the waves dashing against it. He would not be moved, and Satyavati was a picture of woe. Bhishma was sorry for her in her unhappiness. Taking pity on her, he said,
Mother, since an heir means so much to you, I have a suggestion. They say that a noble line, when it threatens to be extinguished, can be revived by a son born of a noble Brahmin. When my guru Bhargava destroyed all the Kshatriya warriors, This was how many of the royal lines were able to continue. If you can think of a worthy Brahmin, we can request him to impregnate the girls and give an heir to the throne. It's been done before, and it is a custom which has won the approval of the great rishis.
Poor Satyavati had to reconcile herself to this. She was displeased with Bhishma, since a true descendant of the Kuru line was no longer possible. Satyavati, after a lot of hesitation, told Bhishma about something which had happened long ago, how before her marriage with Santanu, she had borne a son to Parashara, the great rishi. The son was Vyas. She said that she would summon him, and Bhishma agreed to her proposal. Satyavati then thought of her firstborn, and Vyas hastened to her presence. She welcomed him and told him everything, and he said,
"You are my mother, the woman who gave me life. I will do anything which you command me to do. I am quite willing to grant you your heart's desire. I will try to please you. I will take the wives of Vichitavirya, but it is up to you to make them welcome me. They must be not overwhelmed by my appearance and my beard and ruffled hair and dark complexion."
Satyavati agreed to speak with the girls. She went to Ambika and told her all about the circumstances, that it was her duty to get a child for the sake of the great Kuru house, that she had to welcome the rishi in a proper manner. Ambika agreed to do what she was told. She had no other option. It was a dark night. Ambika was in her chamber waiting for the coming of the sage Vyas, and she saw him. So forbidding and terrible was the appearance of the sage, the poor girl was overcome with horror and loathing for this awful-looking man. But she had to go through the dreadful night. She closed her eyes tight and would not respond to the advances of Vyas, and the night of torture came to an end. Satyavati was waiting anxiously for the coming of Vyas. He told her that a strong, powerful son would be born to Ambika, but since she had closed her eyes throughout the night, afraid to look at him, the child would be born blind. Satyavati was greatly disappointed. She was wild with her daughter-in-law, but it was not of any use to look back at something which had already happened. She requested Vyas to give a son to the other girl, Ambalika, and Vyas agreed to it. Ambalika was equally frightened of the rishi. Her blood ran cold at the sight of him. Her body became pale with fright and loathing, and the night finally passed. In the morning, Vyas told Satyavati that this woman would get a handsome and gentle-natured son. But, he added, he would be as white as his mother when he was being put into her womb. Poor Satyavati did not know what to do. She said,
"My son, the girls have been foolish. Please forgive them for my sake. After her son is born, you must visit Ambika once again. I will chide her in the meantime. You must do this for my sake."
"So be it,"
said Vyas and left for Hastinapur. In due course, the two children were born. One was blind and one was very fair. They were named Dhritarashtra and Pandu. The names were suggested by Vyas himself. Satyavati thought that the time had come when Vyas should revisit Ambika. She took her daughter-in-law to task for her previous mistake and told her that it was this which led to her child being born blind. Ambika was told that the rishi would be coming again to her that night. Ambika could not think of Vyas without horror. She made up her mind that she would send her maid to the rishi in the night. Vyas met the maid. She was so very attentive to every wish of his that Vyas was immensely pleased with her. In the morning, he told Satyavati that a wise and good son would be born, that he would be the incarnation of the Lord of Righteousness. Satyavati's joy was great. Vyas told her,
"But the mother of this child will not be your daughter-in-law. She sent her maid to me last night, and it is the good fortune of this servant maid to bear the best of my three children. I did try my best to help you, but it has not turned out to be a success after all. As for me, Satyavati, please do not ask any more favors of me. For a man who has turned his face away from all the ties of this earth, it is not right to take a woman more than three times. I agreed to it since you, my mother, commanded me. Please do not summon me again."
With these parting words, the great Vyas went away to the snowy peaks of the Himalaya Mountains to resume his penance. The third child was born. He was called Vidura. Again, Bhishma had to take up the task of bringing up the children and ruling the kingdom until Dhritarashtra and Pandu came of age. So passed several years. The three children were more than sons to their uncle Bhishma. He taught them everything that was considered essential for warrior princes. The first son, Dhritarashtra, was endowed with unusual strength. Pandu proved to be specially skilled in archery. Vidura was the wisest of the three. Their education was complete. Bhishma anointed the eldest son, Dhritarashtra, as the king regent. Pandu, who was proficient in the use of all weapons, was appointed the commander of the army. Vidura was trained to be the minister to the king. Because he was blind, Dhritarashtra could not rule the kingdom. Pandu was ruling it in his name with the assistance of Vidura. The three boys had reached their youth. The immediate concern of Bhishma was to find brides for the young men. He heard that the king of Gandhara, Shubal by name, had a daughter who was reputed to be a very beautiful woman. It was also known that she was very pious. She was famed the world over for her devotion to Lord Shiva. The daughter of the king of Madradesh was remarkable for her beauty and her gentleness. So Bhishma spoke to Vidura about them. He told him,
"These two princesses seem to be fit enough to be the queens of our young men. No other king is equal to us in status, only these two kings are endowed with a good heritage. The daughters of these two kings can become the brides of the Kuru princes."
And Vidura told him,
"You are father, mother, guru, everything to us. What you decide for us will be nothing but the best."
Bhishma sent word to the Gandhara king. He demurred at first, as the prince Dhritarashtra was blind, but Gandhari, the daughter of the king, assured him that she had no objection to marrying the Kuru prince. Her next action was a great deal of self-denial. She was convinced that she could not be better than her lord in anything. She therefore took a piece of silk and bound up her eyes, refusing to see the world which her husband would not see. The king Shubal sent his daughter to Hastinapur with his son Sakuni. Their marriage was celebrated in the capital city, and Sakuni returned to Gandhara after the wedding of his sister. The king of the Madra kingdom held a Swayamvara wedding ceremony for his daughter, who chose Pandu as her husband. Pandu eclipsed all the other suitors by the beauty of his person and by his noble looks. The wife of Pandu, Pritha by name, was the child of King Sura. He also had another son called Vasudev. This king had a cousin called Kuntibhoj, who had no children. Sura was very fond of his cousin. He was sorry for him because he was childless. He gave his dear daughter Pritha to Kuntibhoj to be brought up as his own. Pritha was a very beautiful child. Her manners were excellent. She was the most cherished possession of her foster father, and she was given the name Kunti. Once the sage Durvas came to the capital city of Kuntibhoj, he was famed throughout the world for his penance and for his temper, too. He wanted to spend a few days with the king there. Kunti had been appointed by her father to attend to the wants of the sage. Entrusted with such a difficult task, Kunti conducted herself admirably. Indeed, the sage was so pleased with her that he wanted to grant her a boon. He summoned her to his presence and told her that he would teach her a certain mantra. If she recited it, any demigod whom she thought of would come to her. She received the gift with humility, becoming the daughter of a king, and Durvas went away. The child, she was hardly a child, a girl, did not understand what Durvas meant when he said that the demigod whom she invoked would come to her. She was as excited as a child with a new toy. It was early in the morning. Through the eastern window, she could see the sun just rising. The east was drenched in the color of liquid gold. The waters of the river were lapping up against the walls of the palace. It was an unforgettably beautiful scene. The sun and his soft beams, beams which had the coolness of the dawn, and the beautiful river with her path glowing with the red and gold of the rising sun could be seen. This scene touched the heart of the young child. She lost herself in the beauty of it. The sun looked gorgeous. Kunti thought how wonderful it would be if the sun could be there by her side. And in a flash, she remembered the incantation which the great Durvas had taught her. Why, if she recited it, the sun would come to her. Yes, that was the way it was, he said. He said the sun would come to her. The poor child, in blissful ignorance, held her palms together, palms which looked like a lotus bud, and invoked the sun with the incantation she had learnt. She opened her eyes. A miracle was happening. Along the watery path of the river, the sun's rays traveled fast, and she was blinded by the sudden brilliance, and the personification of the sun stood by her side. He stood looking at her with a smile of teasing amusement. Kunti was now extremely pleased with the success of this mantra. She smiled a sweet, happy smile, and clapped her hands together in excitement and said,
"Oh, the sage Vyas said that it would work. I stood looking at you rising in the east. The scene was so beautiful, and you were so beautiful, that I wanted for you to come here. So I recited the incantation which had been taught me by the sage, and you have come. How wonderful!"
The sun was still smiling, and he said,
"Now that I have come, what do you want me to do?"
"Why, nothing. I just thought of you, and I imagined you. And I was thinking how wonderful it would be if you were besides me, that is all."
"That is not all. It's evident that you did not find any meaning in the words of the sage when he taught you the incantation. He said that any god whom you invoked would come to you. Is that not so?"
"Yes."
"Can you not see that it means that the god will embrace you and give you a son as beautiful as the god whom you have summoned?"
Kunti was bewildered. She did not know what to do or what to say.
"I did not know it. I had no idea what the words meant. Please forgive me for this childishness. Please go away and save me from shame."
"But I'm afraid, my dear girl, that is impossible. Once I am summoned by you, I cannot go back until I take you. And you in turn must have me. You cannot escape the power of incantation, which you have used so unthinkingly."
Kunti was beside herself with grief.
"I am a young girl. I am unmarried. What will the world say? What will my father say? It will break his heart if he comes to know that his daughter is not a virgin anymore. Can you not just go away?"
The son was charmed by her winning ways. He loved this young woman who was hardly a girl. He smiled at her and won her heart with his sweet words and his reassuring smile. He said,
"Don't be so frightened, my child. After your child is born, you will again, by my mystic power, become a virgin as you are now, and not a single soul will know of this incident."
The young girl was won over by his words and his beauty, and she accepted him without any fear of the consequences. The sun was ready to depart, he told her.
Your son will be born with armor and earrings. He will be this image of myself. He will be a great archer. In goodness of heart, no one will equal him. He will be famed throughout the world as the greatest of all givers in charity. He will be able to refuse nothing to anyone. Not even if I ask him to forbear from giving, will he forbear. He will be a proud and sensitive man. His fame will live in this world as long as the sun and moon move in their appointed orbits.
And with these words, the sun vanished from her sight. In course of time, a child was born to Kunti. She did not know what to do with it, though. Too young to know the joy of motherhood, she was concerned only with the shame of it. She looked out of the window. The river was flowing as placidly as before. Only in her heart could Kunti see a storm was brewing. She made up her mind. Wrapping up the child in a piece of silk, she placed it in a box made of wood and carried it to the banks of the river. She set the box afloat on the river and came back to her apartments. And from her window, she saw the box floating away, further and further away from her. She felt that her heart was choking inside her with a great pain, a great unspeakable longing for this poor helpless babe floating on the heart of that mighty river. Tears flowed from her eyes. Lifting her hand in supplication to the sun, she cried,
"My Lord, I have done a great injustice to this beautiful child born of you and me. Please guard him. Please do not let any evil befall him."
And she spoke to her disappearing child.
"May your path be auspicious. The Lord of the Waters will guard you. You will not die. All the gods in the high heavens will guard you. I will see you someday in the distant future, and I will recognize you by your earrings and your armor. She will be a fortunate woman who will find you and bring you up as her son. She will see you grow up into manhood, and she will be a happy woman. But I am the most unfortunate of all women. I will never have you as a son. God bless you, my child, my firstborn."
The laughing girl became a woman all of a sudden. Gone were the days of happy, carefree girlhood. Walking or sleeping, she saw just one thing, a tiny wooden box and a piece of silk. Wrapped in the silk, a beautiful child with its armor and earrings gleaming in the light of the morning sun.
You've been listening to Stories from the Mahabharata, the celebrated history of Greater India. Compiled by the great sage Vyas many thousands of years ago, Mahabharata is written in the Sanskrit language in verse form and is here adapted for radio and brought to you by Radio Krishna. Tune in again for our next presentation of Stories from the Mahabharata.